domination through racialized violence.
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges on what the genocide says about us. The Iran-Israel attacks and the prospects of a wider Middle East war have dominated the news. Meanwhile, the blood continues. Genocide is the crime of crimes. We're witnessing it in real time in Gaza. The UN says, quote, "The population of Gaza is enduring destruction at a scale and speed without parallel in recent history. Nothing," the UN says, "can justify the collective punishment of the Palestinian people." Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's promised mighty vengeance quickly became lied. As Chris Hedges points out, racism enables genocide. He says, "Arabs, like all those with darker skins, are worth less in this moral calculus." This explains the outrage over the murder of 7 employees from the World Central Kitchen and over the killing of 75 UN Palestinian aid workers. Those who remain silent in the face of genocide are complicit. Our guest today is Chris Hedges. He's an award-winning independent journalist who has covered the Middle East for many years. He's the host of the Chris Hedges Report, the author of many books. His is The Greatest Evil is War. He spoke in Newark, California in early April 2024.
There are no citizens in Gaza. Every horrifying act of Israel's genocide has been telegraphed in advance. It has been for decades. The dispossession of Palestinians of their land is the beating heart of Israel's settler colonial project. This dispossession has had dramatic historical moments, 1948 and 1967, when huge parts of historic Palestine were seized and hundreds of Palestinians were ethnically cleansed. Dispossession has also occurred in increments. The slow motion theft of land and steady in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. The incursion on October 7th into Israel by Hamas and other resistance groups, which left 1,154 Israelis, tourists, migrant workers dead, and saw about 240 people taken hostage, gave Israel the pretext for what it has long craved, the total erasure of Palestinians. Israel has razed 77 of healthcare facilities in Gaza, 68% of telecommunications infrastructure, all municipal and governmental buildings, commercial, industrial, and agricultural centers, almost half of all roads, over 60% of Gaza's 439,000 homes, 68% of residential buildings, including the bombing of Al-Taj Tower in Gaza City on October 25th that killed 101 people, including 44 children and 37 women, and injured hundreds, and has obliterated refugee camps. The attack alone on the Jabalia refugee camp on October 25th killed at least 126 civilians, including 69 children, and injured 280. Israel has damaged or destroyed Gaza's universities, all of which are now closed, and 60% of other educational facilities, including 13 libraries. It has also destroyed at least 195 heritage sites, including 208 mosques, churches, and Gaza's central archives that held over 150 years of historical records and documents. Israel's warplanes, missiles, drones, tanks, artillery shells, and naval guns daily pulverize Gaza, which is only 20 miles long and 5 miles wide, in a scorched earth campaign unlike anything seen since the war in Vietnam. It has dropped 250,000 tons of explosives, that's the equivalent of 2 nuclear bombs, on Gaza. Many targets selected by artificial intelligence. It drops unguided munitions known as dumb bombs and 2,000-pound bunker buster bombs on refugee camps and densely packed urban centers, as well as the so-called safe zones. 42% of Palestinians killed have been in these safe zones, where they were instructed to flee. Over 1.7 million Palestinians have been displaced from their homes, forced to find refuge in overcrowded UNRWA shelters, hospital corridors and courtyards, schools, tents, or in the open air in southern Gaza, often living next to fetid pools of raw sewage. Israel's killed at least 32,705 Palestinians in Gaza, including 13,000 children and 9,000 women. This means Israel is slaughtering as many as 187 people a day, including 7 children. It has killed 136 journalists, many, if not most of them, deliberately targeted. It has killed 340 doctors, nurses, and other healthcare workers, 4% of Gaza's healthcare personnel. These numbers do not begin to reflect the actual death toll, since only those dead registered in morgues and hospitals, most of which no longer function, are counted. The death toll when those who are missing are counted is well over 40,000, and 70% are women and children. Doctors are forced to amputate limbs without anesthetic. Those with severe medical conditions, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, kidney disease, have died from lack of treatment or will die soon. Over 100 women give birth every day with little to no medical care. Miscarriages are up by 300%. Over 90% of the Palestinians in Gaza suffer from severe food insecurity, with people eating animal feed and grass. Children are dying of starvation. Palestinian writers, academics, scientists, and their family members have been tracked and assassinated. Over 75,000 Palestinians have been wounded, many of whom will be crippled for life. Israel plays linguistic tricks to claim there are no civilians and deny every building, including mosques, hospitals, and schools, protected status. All Palestinians are branded as responsible for the attack on October 7th or written off as human shields for Hamas. All structures are considered legitimate targets because they are allegedly Hamas command centers or harbor Hamas fighters. These accusations, Francesca Albanese, the special rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestine territory occupied 1967, writes, are a pretext used to justify, these are her words, the killing of civilians under a legality. All enveloping pervasiveness admits only of genocidal intent. We have never seen an assault of this magnitude. But every atrocity, the killing of civilians, dispossession of land, arbitrary detention, torture, disappearances, measures imposed on Palestinian towns and villages, house demolitions, revoking residence permits, deportation, destruction of the infrastructure that maintains civil society, military occupation, dehumanizing language, theft of natural resources, especially aquifers, have long defined Israel's campaign to remove Palestinians from historic Palestine. The occupation and genocide would not be possible without the U.S., which gives Israel $3.8 billion a year in military assistance and is now sending another $2.5 billion in bombs including 1,800 MK-84 2,000-pound bombs, 500 MK-82 500-pound bombs, and fighter jets to Israel. This is not only Israel's genocide, it is ours. The mass killing in Gaza is the culmination of a process. It is not an act. It is the predictable denouement of Israel's settler colonial project. It is coded within the DNA of the Israeli apartheid state. It is where Israel understands this fact, and everything Israel does makes sense. The blockage of humanitarian aid, the sealing off of northern Gaza, the mass starvation, the obliteration of Gaza's infrastructure, the looming assault on Rafah, and the upsurge in violence and land seizures in the West Bank. Israel has allowed 15,413 trucks into Gaza during the past 6 months. Gaza needs five times that number. Israel allowed 2,874 trucks in February, a 44% reduction from the previous month. Israeli soldiers have also killed scores of Palestinians attempting to receive aid from trucks in more than two dozen incidents. These attacks include the killing of at least 21 Palestinians and the wounding of 150. 14th, when Israeli forces fired on thousands of people in Gaza City. The same area had been targeted by Israeli soldiers hours before. Israel's assault has caught Gaza's own aid workers and international agencies partners inside a practically uninhabitable environment of mass displacement and deprivation, where 75% of solid waste is now being dumped in random sites, 97% of groundwater made unfit for human use, and the Israeli state using starvation as a weapon of war, Oxfam states. There is no place in Gaza, Oxfam notes, that is safe amid the forcible and often multiple displacements of almost the entire population, which makes the principal distribution of aid unviable, including agencies' abilities to help repair vital public services at scale. Oxfam blasts Israel for its disproportionate and indiscriminate attacks on civilians and humanitarian assets, as well as solar, water, power, and sanitation plants, UN premises, hospitals, roads, and aid convoys and warehouses, even when these assets are supposedly declicked after their coordinates have been shared for protection. None of these Israeli tactics will be altered with the of a temporary pier. In fact, given the pending assault on Rafah, where 1.2 million displaced Palestinians are crowded in tent cities or camped in air, Israel's tactics are about to get worse. If the Arab world will not take the Palestinian refugees, as Secretary of State Antony Blinken proposed during his first round of visits after October 7th, the Palestinians could well be cast adrift on ships. It worked in Beirut in 1982 when some 8,000 Palestinian Liberation Organization members were sent by sea to Tunis or Tunisia, and another 2,500 ended up in other Arab states. Israel, for this reason, supports the temporary pier the Biden administration is building to ostensibly deliver food and aid to Gaza, aid whose distribution will be overseen by the Israeli military. You need drivers that don't exist, trucks that don't exist, feeding a distribution system that doesn't exist. Jeremy Kneidek, a former senior aid official in the Biden administration and now president of the Refugees International Aid Advocacy Group, told The Guardian. The small shipments of seaborne aid, like the food packets that have been airdropped, will not alleviate the looming famine. They are not meant to. They are cynical pieces of theater used to mask the orchestrated mass starvation. Israel is creating a humanitarian crisis of such catastrophic proportions, with thousands of Palestinians killed by bombs, shells, missiles, bullets, starvation, and infectious diseases, that the only option will soon be death or deportation. The pier, perhaps, is where the last act in this gruesome genocidal campaign will be played out as Palestinians are herded by Israeli soldiers onto ships. Or perhaps Washington will be able to buy off the Egyptian government to expel Palestinians to the Sinai. Whatever the outcome, the Biden administration, without this genocide could not be carried out, will facilitate it. Zionist leaders are quite open about their goals. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant announced that Gaza would receive, quote, no electricity, no food, no water, no fuel. Israeli Minister of Foreign Affairs Israel Katz said, humanitarian aid, no electrical switch will be turned on, no water hydrant will be opened. Avi Dichter, the Minister of Agriculture, referred to Israel's military assault as the Gaza Nakba, referring, of course, to the catastrophe which between 1947 and 1949 drove 750,000 Palestinians and saw thousands massacred by Zionist militias. Likud member of the Knesset, Revital Gottlieb, posted on her social media account, bring down buildings, bomb without distinction, flatten Gaza without mercy. This time, there is no room for mercy. Not to be outdone, Minister of Heritage Amichai Eliyahu supported using nuclear weapons on Gaza as, quote, one of the possibilities. The message from the Israeli leadership is unequivocal. Annihilate the Palestinians the same way we annihilated Native Americans. The Australians annihilated the First Nations peoples. The Germans annihilated the Herero in Namibia. The Turks annihilated the Armenians, and the Nazis annihilated Jews. The process is the same, and we cannot plead ignorance. We know what happened to the Palestinians. We know what is happening to the Palestinians, and we know what will happen to the Palestinians. But it is easier to pretend. Pretend Israel will allow in humanitarian aid. Pretend there will be a ceasefire. Pretend Palestinians will return to their destroyed homes in Gaza. Pretend Gaza will be rebuilt. Pretend the Palestine Authority will administer Gaza. Pretend there will be a two-state solution. Pretend there is no genocide. The genocide says something, not only about Israel, but about us, about Western civilization, about who we are as a people, where we come from, and what defines us. It says that all our vaunted morality and respect for a lie. It says that people of color, especially when they are poor and vulnerable, do not count. It says that their hopes, dreams, dignity, and aspirations for freedom are worthless. It says we will ensure global domination through racialized violence. This lie that Western civilization is predicated on values such as respect for human rights and the rule of law is one the Palestinians and all those in the global South, as well as Native American, Black and Brown Americans, have known for centuries. But with the Gaza genocide live streamed, this lie is becoming very hard to sustain. Do not halt Israel genocide because we are Israel, infected with white supremacy and intoxicated by our domination of the globe's wealth and the power to obliterate others with our industrial weapons. Remember the New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman telling Charlie Rose on the eve of the war in Iraq, soldiers should go house to house from Basra to Baghdad and say, these are his words, to Iraqis, suck on this. And this is the real credo of the American empire. The world outside of the industrial fortresses in the global north is acutely aware that the fate of the Palestinians is their fate. As climate change imperils survival, as resources become scarce, as migration becomes an imperative for millions, as agricultural yields decline, as coastal areas are flooded, as droughts and wildfires proliferate, as states fail, as armed resistance movements rise to battle their oppressors along with their proxies, genocide will not be an anomaly, it will be the norm. The Earth's vulnerable and poor, those Frantz Fanon call the wretched of the Earth, will be the next Palestinians. Genocide always requires the active participation of educated professionals, physicians, scientists, engineers, military leaders, lawyers, clergy, university professors, who, as Robert J. Lifton points out, create not only the technology side, but much of its ideological rationale, moral climate, and organizational process. A group of 100 Israeli doctors in November 2023 defended the bombing of hospitals in Gaza, claiming they were used as Hamas command centers, a charge Israel has been unable to verify. The deans of U.S. medical schools and leading medical organizations, especially the American Medical Association, have joined the ranks of universities, law schools, churches, media, to turn their backs on the Palestinians. The AMA shut down a debate on a ceasefire resolution among its members and has called for medical neutrality, although there was no medical neutrality when it denounced Russia's invasion of Ukraine. There is a cost to denouncing genocide, a cost they do not pay. They fear being attacked. They fear destroying their careers. They fear losing funding. They fear a loss of status. They fear persecution. They fear social isolation. This fear makes them complicit. And what of those who do speak out? They are branded as anti-Semites and supporters of terrorism. George Washington University clinical psychology professor Laura Sheehy was pushed out of her job. Former head of Human Rights Watch, Kenneth Roth, was denied a fellowship at Harvard's Carr Center for Human Rights Policy because of his alleged, quote, anti-Israel bias. San Francisco professor Rabab Abdelhada was sued for supporting Palestinian rights. Medical students and faculty in Canada are being suspended or expelled if they publicly criticize Israel. Dr. Rupa Mara, professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, called for a halt to the bombing of hospitals and the examination of the impact of Zionism as a racist ideology. This led to vitriolic attacks against her, attacks tacitly endorsed by the medical where she works. She has been slandered as an anti-Semite and targeted by the Canary Mission, a Zionist organization that seeks to defame and destroy the careers of students and faculty that criticize Israel and defend Palestinian rights. She has had speaking engagements rescinded and received death threats. The danger is not only the Israeli crimes are denounced. The danger, more importantly, is that the moral bankruptcy and the cowardice of our own institutions and politicians are exposed. Those who promote this genocide have no rational or humane arguments to offer the public, only character assassination and censorship. The dehumanization of Palestinians is lifted from this racist playbook, the playbook of all settler colonial projects, including our own. It is why the disdain Israel's occupation and genocide. Arabs, like all those with darker skins, are worth less in this moral. This explains the outrage over the murder of 7 employees from Global Central Kitchen and the silence over the murder of over 175 staff from the United Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, or UNRWA. Global Central Kitchen, unlike UNRWA, which has seen its U.S. funding cut, does not have the logistic capacity to provide the food needed to alleviate the famine. Israel and Washington's support for Global Central Kitchen is part of the campaign to destroy UNRWA. Several humanitarian aid groups in Gaza after the killings have suspended operations. This suspension advances Israel's goal of a complete blockage of food to starving Palestinians. Let me end tonight by speaking about Aaron Bushnell, who lit himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., resulting in his death. He pitted divine violence against the radical evil of Gaza. As an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force, he was part of the vast machinery that sustains the genocide in Gaza, no less morally conscious soldiers, technocrats, engineers, scientists, and bureaucrats who oiled the apparatus of the Nazi Holocaust. This was a role he could no longer accept. "I will no longer be complicit," he said calmly in his video as he walked to the gate of the embassy. "I'm about to engage in an extreme act of protest, but compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their coloners, it's not extreme at all. This is what our ruling class has decided will be normal. Young men and women sign up for the military for many reasons, but starting, bombing, and killing women and children is usually not amongst them. Shouldn't, in a just world, the U.S. fleet break the Israeli blockade of Gaza to provide food, shelter, and medicine? Shouldn't U.S. warplanes impose a no-fly zone over Gaza to halt the saturation bombing? Shouldn't Israel be issued an ultimatum to withdraw its forces from Gaza? Shouldn't the weapons, shipments, billions, and military aid and intelligence provided to Israel be halted? Shouldn't those who commit genocide, as well as those who support genocide, be held accountable? These simple questions are the ones Bushnell's death forces us to confront. Many of us like to ask ourselves," he posted shortly before his suicide, "what would I do if I was alive during slavery or the Jim Crow South or apartheid? What would I do if my country was committing genocide? The answer is you're doing it right now. The coalition forces intervened in northern Iraq in 1991 to protect the Kurds following the first Gulf War. The suffering of the Kurds was extensive, but dwarfed by the genocide in Gaza. A no-fly zone for the Iraqi Air Force was imposed. The Iraqi military was pushed out of the northern Kurdish areas. Humanitarian aid saved Kurds from starvation, infectious diseases, and death from exposure. But that was another time, another war. Genocide is evil carried out by our enemies, defended and sustained when carried out by our allies."
You're listening to Chris Hedges, "The Genocide Says About Us." This is Independent Alternative Radio. To get copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-19. Again, 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
Walter Benjamin, whose friends Fritz Heinle and Rika Seligson committed suicide in 1914 to protest militarism in the First World War,